Welcome to Protectors of the Parrots. Produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust, this is a series of visits with the frontline researchers and conservationists who have dedicated themselves to saving some of the planet's rarest birds. Hello. On October the 2nd, 2016, a decision affecting the African grey parrot was taken in Johannesburg by CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. The decision made at the COP17 conference gave extended protection to the African grey by uplisting it from Appendix 2 of the Convention to Appendix 1. The African grey is a familiar and well-loved parrot, of course, but one that has become increasingly rare in the wild. In fact, unsustainable trapping for the pet trade has driven many populations of this beautiful bird to the brink of extinction. The World Parrot Trust heralded the CITES decision by writing, "Victory declared for African grey parrots," in recognition of both the work that went into presenting the case for uplisting of the African grey and the protection that should result from it. Which is quite a lot to take in if you're not thoroughly steeped in all things CITES. How does CITES work, and what does uplisting to a different appendix actually mean? My name is Charlie Moores, and today I'm talking with Dr. Rowan Martin, the World Parrot Trust's Africa Programme Director, who was at COP17 and who is deeply involved in the conservation of the African grey. Before I talk with Rowan, though, how about some background information? Every 3 years, signatories to CITES come together at what is known as the Conference of the Parties, or COPs, to discuss whether or not international trade of selected species should be subject to controls. Once an endangered species becomes listed, there are currently around 5,000 species of animals and 29,000 species of plants covered by CITES, they are placed in one of three appendices. Which appendix the species is placed in is intended to reflect the extent of the threat to that species and the level of control that applies to the trade in that species. Appendices are subject to some exemptions, but in broad terms, Appendix 3 lists species included at the request of a party that already regulates trade in the species and that needs the cooperation of other countries to prevent unsustainable or illegal exploitation. Appendix 2 lists species that are not necessarily now threatened with extinction, but that may become so unless trade is closely controlled, while Appendix 1 names the species that are the most endangered of all the CITES-listed animals and plants, those species threatened with extinction. CITES prohibits international trade of wild specimens of all species on Appendix 1. It's in effect the highest level of protection CITES can give. How effective is that protection? Well, listing doesn't take the place of national laws, but decisions taken at the COPs are legally binding on the parties, and in its almost 40 years, the Convention has developed strategies to deal with infractions and non-compliance by its members. Decisions taken at CITES do, in other words, matter. So that's the background to the decision. What does it mean in practice? While uplisting was certainly welcome, I suggested to Rowan that in some ways it was both good and bad news. Good that the threat that international trade is having on African greys has been fully recognised, of course, but bad in the sense that this once plentiful and widespread species should need that extra protection in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is a decision that was very much needed to protect the remaining populations of grey parrots that are out there. But it's very sad that it's reached this point that they have to be placed on Appendix 1. So under Appendix 2, which is where they have been managed under CITES since 1982, there are many mechanisms in place for ensuring that any trade in wild grey parrots is sustainable and isn't having a detrimental impact on wild populations. There have been numerous efforts and many things have been tried, and some of these have been to some extent successful, but ultimately populations of grey parrots have continued to decline and overexploitation for trade has been a big part of this.
Rowan, let's accentuate the positive. They have been uplisted now. What does the transfer to Appendix 1 mean in real terms? What does it mean in the field to the African grey parrot?
Yeah, so the transfer to Appendix 1 means that all legal international trade in wild source birds will no longer be permitted. And this will have an immediate impact for wild populations. So under Appendix 2, various countries have been allowed to export parrots under a quota system whereby any exports require permits. But this system is open to much abuse and has been very heavily abused in the case of grey parrots. So there's been tens of thousands of parrots in the last few years exported in excess of those quotas, often using permits that state that they're captive bred when there are no captive breeding facilities in those countries. And often from being exported from countries that aren't even range states, there's no natural populations, but somehow these countries are exporting with a permit large numbers of wild source grey parrots. So all of those existing loopholes, if you like, are going to be shut down. And I think what's particularly important about this is it will make the job of enforcement agencies in importing countries much easier to do. So there will no longer be ambiguity when a shipment arrives with a permit that looks legitimate about whether or not that shipment should actually be allowed into the country. So this is welcomed by a number of countries which import large numbers of grey parrots simply because it's going to make their job of enforcement much easier to manage.
Right. I'd like to discuss the role of enforcement agencies in just a minute, Rowan. But just to clarify a point first, captive bred greys can still be traded, can't they? But only if the facilities are listed with CITES.
Yeah, that's right. There are provisions within the Appendix 1 listing to allow captive bred parrots to be still exported on the international market, providing those facilities meet certain requirements to show that they have been legitimately bred in captivity, to show that the breeding stock has been legitimately obtained and that they meet various standards.
Right.
So, yes, it's not about shutting down all trade in captive bred parrots by any means, but it will mean that there are much better checks and safeguards on that industry.
Negotiations at CITES can be tense, Ro, and I think many people know that, and it's certainly the way it was reported in the media and online. So what do you think was the main factor or factors that meant this proposal to uplist to Appendix 1 was successful? Was it the science, the conservation status, or perhaps support from range states in Africa themselves?
So CITES has a number of criteria against which such a proposal is judged. So there are biological criteria to do with what's happening to wild populations. Are they declining? How quickly are they declining? And trade criteria as well, looking at what the impact of trade is on those declines. And I think with this proposal, the criteria were very clearly met. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped massively with ensuring that this proposal went through. What's important is that in the last few years, there's been a number of field studies looking at what's happening to wild populations, looking into the trade, looking at who's trapping those parrots and where they are going and the extent to which current restrictions on trade are being effective. And so with all that information in front of them, I think it made the job of parties very easy to decide whether or not this species actually met the criteria for being transferred to Appendix 1.
Yeah, the science is fairly unequivocal. I mean, there have been huge declines in wild populations and trade has been implicated in that decline. So it was really a door that needed closing, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Where there has been good baseline data available, it's been possible to go back and repeat those studies to actually look at changes in populations over time. And the declines that have been reported have been massive in some cases, 90 to 99%. However, there are parts of their range where there is no baseline data available. So it's been very difficult to actually say equivocally the degree to which populations have declined. So what's been important there is to be able to look at what processes are taking place there, what level of trapping is taking place, what we know about the current density of populations there, to extrapolate to what is happening and what will likely happen in the future. If the current system of regulation wasn't changed.
Yeah.
And I think that's made a very clear case that Appendix 1 listing was very much needed and very much needed sooner rather than later.
Rowan, the World Parrot Trust launched a petition prior to COP17 which urged delegates to consider uplisting. It attracted a huge number of signatures. How important do you think that petition was in this decision?
Yeah, we were overwhelmed by the response, by the number of signatures and the way that it garnered interest from all over the world. I think it is important to raise the profile of the issue. I mean, certainly we made sure that all of the delegates at the CITES conference were aware of the level of public interest in this subject. And I think that's really important just for ensuring that people take the time to look into the issues very carefully and give it a proper appraisal and really give it the attention that it deserves. It's a very important issue, and I think that was recognised through the petition.
There's sometimes a feeling that signing petitions like these don't have much of an impact, but in this case, it really did, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think everyone who signed the petition can really feel great that they played a part in this process and ensured that this really important action was taken for the conservation of grey parrots.
That's great. The most important thing now, Rowan, is what next? I mean, you mentioned enforcement agencies earlier. How can the trade ban be enforced? I mean, presumably it will take increased resources put into enforcement, for instance, and maybe increased education in Africa where the trapping is taking place.
Yes, I mean, this is very much, in a sense, the start of a lot of initiatives that are needed for grey parrots. Appendix 1 listing in itself, just a listing on a piece of paper is not going to change anything. And what's needed is meaningful enforcement in many countries. As I said earlier, I think the big benefit will be that enforcement for importing countries will be much simpler and easier to operate. And that's actually going to effectively reduce the demand, which is what has been sucking parrots out of many parts of Central Africa.
Yeah.
A number of range states lack the capacity to effectively manage and regulate trade. And there's certainly a need to help develop that capacity. But I think what's really critical is actually reducing the demand through preventing large shipments being exported or being imported. In addition to improved enforcement, there certainly needs to be efforts targeted in key areas to try and develop livelihoods, to reduce the incentive for people to trap parrots on the ground.
Yeah.
And World Parrot Trust is involved in some of those projects and will continue to do so. But what's important is that these projects will no longer be undermined by high levels of demand on the international market.
And there was a notable announcement made by breeders of grey parrots in South Africa, I believe.
So South Africa has very recently emerged as one of the leading exporters of captive bred grey parrots. They're exporting tens of thousands each year, and it's a very lucrative industry. The offer by the Parrot Breeders Association of South Africa to actually put a levy on their exports of captive bred grey parrots, which would be directly used for conservation in range state. It was very heartening.
When you say that demand for African greys will fall, Rowan, presumably there will still be people around the world who will want to buy and own these birds. So presumably this separate decision by breeders will be important as they can legally fulfill demand while contributing to conservation. I mean, that could make quite a difference.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly positive, and I think it's a really great outcome of the meeting. I think it's important to note that the South African breeding industry has expanded massively in the last few years, largely because they've become very adept at breeding grey parrots very efficiently, and there's been investment in some very large facilities, and they've also been very successful at marketing those overseas. So it's not the case that there's necessarily a fixed demand that's going to be supplied by any other source. But it is important that anyone who's considering buying a grey parrot, and I urge them to consider that very carefully before they do, but they make sure that those grey parrots are captive bred, but not only that they are captive bred, but they actually come from a reputable breeder. So many breeders of grey parrots actually use wild sourced parrots in order to breed from because they're very cheap to obtain, or at least have been cheap and easy to obtain until recently. So make sure you're buying your grey parrot from a reputable source and from captive bred breeding stock.
Right. I mean, there are many considerations to make before buying a parrot, but obviously ensuring that the bird comes from a captive bred source is right there up at the top of the list, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned the projects that the World Parrot Trust are doing in Africa. I was, of course, planning to ask you how listeners to this podcast can help. Presumably the answer is by supporting the trust and contributing to those projects.
Yes, so the World Parrot Trust works with partners in a number of countries to assist with conservation efforts, assist with the development of alternative livelihoods for people who live near parrots, and also to assist with enforcement efforts. So we will certainly continue to do that work. And of course, we always need resources to do that with. So contributions are always welcome.
I said right at the beginning, Rowan, that this uplisting was sort of mixed news, but let's close on a positive note. This move to Appendix 1 is good news for African greys, isn't it? And there's still plenty of work to do to reverse the declines in the wild, but this is a very positive step.
Yes, it is. It's a very positive outcome, and we're very optimistic for the future, but there is still stacks of work to be done. It is very sad that it has come to a point where populations in many parts of Africa have collapsed dramatically before this action has been taken. But it's all is not lost, and there are still places where there are substantial grey parrot populations, and we'll be doing everything we can to ensure that those grey parrots populations remain robust and healthy into the future.
Yeah, and actually it is important to note that while habitat loss across the greys range in Africa has taken place, suitable forest habitat does still exist. This isn't a case of no matter what's done, there's nowhere left for greys to live. With the right conservation measures in place, wild populations can still rebound.
Yeah, there, in parts of the grey parrots range, there has been substantial habitat loss, and that's definitely been a contributing factor to their declines. But there are still substantial tracts of forest, good habitat where grey parrots can live and thrive. And I hope with this action that those areas will be protected in the way they need to be.
Rowan, finally, parrot conservationists don't stand still, do they? I gather now that COP17 has wrapped up, you're about to fly up to Senegal to the Pan-African Ornithological Congress to discuss African greys and other African parrots.
Yeah, the Pan-African Ornithological Congress is taking place in Dakar next week, and we're organising a symposium on African parrot research, which is going to be a great opportunity to get a lot of African parrot researchers together to discuss what needs to be done next, what more information do we need to know, and how are we all going to work together to ensure that what's happened to grey parrots doesn't happen to many other African parrot species.
As we said, there is still a lot of work to do, but on behalf of the African Greys, Rowan, congratulations to you and everyone involved in getting this landmark decision in Johannesburg. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Likewise. Thank you, Charlie.
Dr. Rowan Martin, the World Parrot Trust's Africa Programme Director. And of course, you can find out much more information about the important work the World Parrot Trust does at parrots.org.